Yadasya Nabhyam Nalinan Ahamasam Mahatmanah Navidam Yagya Sambharam Purusha Vayavanrite Yada
At the time of Asya is Nabhyat from the abdomen Nalinat from the lotus flower Aham myself Asam took my birth Mahatmanah of a great person Naavidam did not know Yagyam sacrificial Sambharam ingredients Purusha of the Lord Avayavan personal bodily limbs Rite except Translation. When I was born from the abdominal lotus flower of the Lord, Mahavishnu, the great person, I had no ingredients for sacrificial performances except the bodily limbs of the great personality of Godhead. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Brahma, the creator of the cosmic manifestation, is known as Svayambhu, or one who is born without father and mother. The general process is that a living creature is born out of the sex combination of the male father and the female mother. But Brahma, the firstborn living being, is born of the abdominal lotus flower of the Mahavishnu, planar expansion of Lord Krishna. The abdominal lotus flower is part of the Lord's bodily limbs, and Brahma is born out of the lotus flower. Therefore, Lord Brahma is also part of the Lord's body. Brahma, after his appearance in the gigantic hollow of the universe, saw darkness and nothing else. He felt perplexity, and from his heart he was inspired by the Lord to undergo austerity, thereby acquiring the ingredients for sacrificial performances. But there was nothing besides the two of them, namely the personality of Mahavishnu and Brahma himself, born of the bodily part of the Lord. For sacrificial performances, many ingredients were in need, especially animals. The animal sacrifice is never meant for killing the animal, but for achieving the successful result of the sacrifice. The animal offered in the sacrificial fire is, so to speak, destroyed, but the next moment is given a new life by dint of the Vedic hymns chanted by the expert priest. When such an expert priest is not available, the animal sacrifice in the fire of the sacrificial altar is forbidden. Thus Brahma created even the sacrificial ingredients out of the bodily limbs of the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, which means that the cosmic order was created by Brahma himself. Also, nothing is created out of nothing, but everything is created from the person of the Lord. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Aham sarvasya prabhavo muttak sarvabhavartate. Everything is made from my bodily limbs, and I am therefore the original source of all creations. The impersonalists argue that there is no use in worshipping the Lord when everything is nothing but the Lord himself. The personalist, however, worships the Lord out of a great sense of gratitude, utilizing the ingredients born out of the bodily limbs of the Lord. The fruits and flowers are available from the body of the earth, and yet Mother Earth is worshipped by the sensible devotee with ingredients born from the earth. Similarly, Mother Ganges is worshipped by the water of the Ganges, and yet the worshipper enjoys the result of such worship. Worship of the Lord is also performed by the ingredients born from the bodily limbs of the Lord, and yet the worshipper, who is himself a part of the Lord, achieves the result of devotional service to the Lord. While the impersonalist wrongly concludes that he is the Lord himself, the personalist, out of a great gratitude, worships the Lord in devotional service, knowing perfectly well that nothing is different from the Lord. The devotee therefore endeavors to apply everything in the service of the Lord, because he knows that everything is the property of the Lord, and that no one can claim anything as one's own. This perfect conception of oneness helps the worshiper in being engaged in loving service, whereas the impersonalist, being falsely puffed up, remains a non-devotee forever without being recognized by the Lord. Yadasyana pyam nalinad aham asam mahatmanaha navidam yavgyasambaram purusha vayavan vite omayanatumandasya kananjana shalakaya chakshura mirtam jena tasmai shri gurave namah. Several important points here for us to consider. One is that everyone who is embodied from Brahma down is subject to be bewildered by the material energy. And no one, using their own faculties of analysis, intelligence, mental speculation, or what have you, can correctly ascertain what is right and what is wrong, or what is to be done and what is not to be done. It's just completely impossible without higher help. Higher help, meaning, who's higher than Brahma, means has to be God. Has to be divine direction. And the animals and the plants, the lower species, or the dull human beings who are like animals and plants, they cannot be expected to inquire about these things. They simply follow the instincts and urges of the body and the mind that they have according to the modes of material nature. There's no question. A dog doesn't try to decide what is right and what is wrong very deeply. He has his analysis of right and wrong. Right means what does he think will be suitable for his own senses, and what can he get away with. It's like if the master tells him not to go up on the table, if he's one of those dogs that they allow inside. So if the master says don't eat from the table, then while the master's there he may respect that. But when the master goes in the other room, then he thinks, well, the food is there, my senses are desiring it, so he jumps on the table and eats the food anyway. So his right and wrong is based on what he thinks he can maximize his enjoyment by senses. Whereas a more intelligent human being can actually consider doing something or not doing something on the basis of a higher consideration. Therefore, humans are called rational animals. They can rationalize. Is this correct? A cat, for example, when the cat eats the mouse, doesn't even think that maybe the mouse is feeling pain, the mouse has little children that are depending upon it, the mouse has a husband, the mouse, these considerations are not there. There's no empathy. There's no rationality. Is it really right? I could just eat, you know, some chapatis. I don't really need to eat this mouse. That would be better. Save the suffering. But no, cannot consider. Well, what is right, what is wrong, is for the more intelligent. Basically in the human species. That is where this kind of analysis begins. Atato brahmajigyasa. Now that you've reached the human form of life, you can inquire into spirit, into the spiritual matters. That is the beginning aphorism of Vedanta Sutra. Therefore, it is most important to use human life for this purpose and this purpose only, not for just trying to pander to the senses. Because if we do that, then we're wasting the rational body, this great body we have. Sometimes we may give the example, if you have a very nice computer, a top-of-the-line computer, very sophisticated, can do so many things. And if you use it for hammering nails, you know, say, say, oh, it works really good. It's really knocking these nails in good. Now I may use it for, you know, some other thing. Maybe knocking down a wall might be good at that too. Well, you can use it for that, but that's not very intelligent. If you have a little intelligence, you'll know how to use the computer. You can do so many things. But if you're just using it for knocking nails and breaking walls, it's a fool. So similarly, to use the human form of life just for eating, for sleeping, mating, defending, that is such a waste. Such a gross misuse of this valuable instrument. Durlabha manushyam janma. Very rarely achieved this human form of life. So it should be utilized for the highest purpose, prema pamartha mahan, to achieve the ultimate perfection, self-realization, love of Godhead. So that's the first point, that everyone, including Brahma, Arjuna, and everyone else, is not capable of figuring out their own situation by themselves. They don't have the capability. They have to hear from a divine entity about what is right and what is wrong. They will not be able to conclude it by themselves. To some extent they may, by their intuition or speculation, they may conclude that it's not right to kill or something like that. Arjuna came to that conclusion that it wasn't good to cause violence and so that's good. But then the problem is when to apply these principles. Arjuna was thinking it's not good to apply violence, in any, at least in this circumstance, because these are my friends and relatives. But then the problem came that, but they were aggressors. They were aggressing. They were aggressive against him and his brothers and so many others. And they were misbehaving against the Vedic instructions. So then violence was required. So first it was not required, then it is required. And he was a Kshatriya, so he was supposed to fight, but then he thought, but I'm not a Kshatriya. I can act like a saintly person, that will be higher. Then he got confused. I'll go to the heavenly planets if I fight and die. I'll get sinful reactions if I fight. It was all confusing to him. Therefore it is said, Tarko Pratishta Shuteyo Vibhinna Nasavrishir Yasna Matam Nibhinnam Dharmasya Tatvam Nihitam Guhayam. Mahajano Yena Gatasapanta. We will be confused by arguments, philosophers, and scriptures. Anyone can read the scriptures and anyone can become confused. Everyone will have a different opinion, different philosophers. What to do? This is the big dilemma. Everyone is in this position. What to do in life? What's right, what's wrong? And nobody knows. The only one who knows is one who surrenders to Krishna. Or Krishna's devotee. Mahajan means great soul, great personality, and Krishna is the greatest Mahajan. And his devotees, they're also Mahajans. There are Swayambhu and Narada Shambhu. The Brahma became one of the Swayambhu. He became one of the Mahajans. How? How did he become? He wasn't originally. When he first came, you see, he wasn't a Mahajan. He didn't know what to do. But, fortunately, because of his sincerity and his genuineness, his humility, he was prepared to hear from authorities. Tene Brahma Hrida. He wasn't stubborn that when he heard that sound, tapa, which means austerity, he didn't think, oh, why should I follow any authority? I figured out myself. Don't tell me. He didn't. He could have. So many would have done that. But no, he performed austerity, great austerity, and because of his piety also, he's not an ordinary living being. He's ordinary in one sense, that he's like all of us, spirit, soul, but he's extraordinary in that he's performed incredible pious activities to take the birth of Brahma, to get a body like that with such great intelligence and great capabilities. Here we see that from the bodily limbs of the Lord, he created the sacrificial performances and everything. The sacrificial fire, the sacrificial the instruments, the mantras, the yajnas, the animals. We can't do that. He's able to construct everything. That's how brilliant he is. Not only is he brilliant in material affairs, but he's brilliant in spiritual affairs. He's very humble. He wanted to serve the Lord in this capacity. So, Mahavishnu, or Garbhadakshya Vishnu, gave him the capabilities, and he utilized them for not only performing his material duty but also for understanding the ways of life, what should be done. So we are in the same position as Brahma. We're in the same position as Arjuna. We don't know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Isn't it? Can you think of anyone who isn't in that position? We already discussed someone like an animal. An animal doesn't have to worry about this. He doesn't waste his time. He doesn't wake up in the morning, what should I do today? No. He just does whatever he feels like doing, or whatever he's forced to do by the modes of material nature. So people who are like that, they're not really humans, they're animals. So, not for animals, but for humans, they have this question, and they're plagued by it. What to do? What is right? But unfortunately, we see the world is becoming more and more animalistic. So people are thinking less and less about these important subjects. What's right and what's wrong? Still there are some, they have debates, you know, what are we going to do with our... We're destroying the earth by pollution. We should stop. And some are thinking that abortion is right. Some are thinking it's wrong. Some are thinking, is there God? Is there not God? So at least there's some thinking going on. People are trying to understand. The scientists are trying in their own way to find out the origin. This is an attempt. But their attempts are all childish because they're not willing to hear from the authority. and they're trying to tune in and get knowledge or understand things which are not available to their frequency. It's like a person who's trying to get a television reception or picture, but he's only got a toaster. So plugs in the toaster, turns the dials. He's waiting for the TV to come on the toaster. And someone says, I'm trying to get the channel with CNN on it here. He said, that's a toaster, it's not a television. But he's trying anyway. And he won't listen. No, you don't know. It's not possible because it's a different instrument. Similarly, we cannot get the answers to our questions by turning the dial of our minds or our intellect or by reading books of other minds, of other... It's just not... In order for us to understand these things, because transcendental knowledge is the ultimate, what should and should not be done. But spiritual knowledge has worked for everything, for all circumstances. He will be able to know exactly what and divinely guided, that in every circumstance he knows what to do. Example is given at Ashvatthama. After Ashvatthama was captured, and killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi. So, first Krishna told him to kill him. Then Bhima wanted to kill him, but Draupadi and Yudhisthira said, don't kill him, he's a Brahmana. So Arjuna was perplexed. Krishna said, now you have to please everyone. You have to please, so act. So he did. He cut off the jewel from his head, but didn't actually kill the body. So this was perfect intelligence, spiritual intelligence, that he received by inspiration from Krishna because he had surrendered to Krishna. When one surrenders to Krishna, it means out of love, he wants to please Krishna. Priti purvakam. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. He's serving the Lord with love and devotion. And when he does that, then dadami buddhi yogam tam. Krishna gives him the intelligence to behave, to do everything perfectly. So that's one point. Another point is that nothing comes from nothing. It's not that all the universe has come sprouted from nothing, just like the scientists foolishly say, there was a chunk. And Srila Prabhupada says, where did the chunk come from? How can you begin when there's a chunk? That means there had to be a source of the chunk. You're beginning in the middle. There was a chunk. Where did the chunk come from? And I say, well, it came from something we don't know. A black hole or something. So, if you believe it came from nothing, or if you believe that it always existed, or if you believe that it came from a black hole or something like that, and what's wrong with believing it came from a person? It's just as logical. Nothing more absurd about that. So here we find that everything comes from Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pavartate. Everything material and spiritual comes from him. This is the Vedic understanding. Janma jasyataha. It all emanates from him. This makes perfect sense because this would also explain why within the creation we find living entities and we find minds and we find eyes and ears and all the ingredients, because they're all there in the body of the Lord. Whereas it would be very unlikely and unsensible. Wouldn't make any sense if we see that something in the creation does not exist from its source. For example, if the source was something impersonal, but yet persons came out, then that would be very illogical. How could something personal come from something impersonal? Then they'd say, well, yes, if there's a, you know, in the proper combination. So then, if you put forward this theory, and you claim that it's scientific, then you should be able to prove it. Take some chemicals, mix them, and make life. And if you can't do that, then your theory is not acceptable. But yet that theory is being accepted as truth by many. So it's a cheating society also. And that's the other point, that everything comes from Krishna. Everything emanates from him. And he felt perplexity, and from his heart he was inspired to by the Lord to undergo austerity. So that's important too. We have to undergo some austerity. Avairagya vijanija bhakti yogam. But the austerity in this age is not very great. We don't have to meditate like Brahma did for, you know, thousands and thousands of years. No, we cannot do that. The most austerity we can perform is to follow four principles and chant 16 rounds. That's about it. And take part in the Sankirtan. Sankirtan movement. That's it. If we can do that, that's all the austerity that's required for this age to become pure enough to go back to God. That will purify us. In previous ages, it was more was expected, in a sense, more, shall we say. It's not that this is that performing devotional service, as we've described, is less, but it's not as taxing, you could say. Yet, because of the relative situation, to be engaged in Sankirtan and the Krishna conscious movement nowadays is considered a greater accomplishment than even sitting down and meditating for 40,000 years in the previous age. So, we should always appreciate that. And appreciate the devotees who are engaged in such activities. That's the austerities that we need to perform. We don't need to go beyond that. Oh, I won't eat. I'll just eat one chickpea every 3 weeks or something. And that way I'll become very pure. No, you won't become pure. If you try to do that, it's artificial. You'll become... it's just artificial. So what will happen is... you'll eat one chickpea for a while and then you'll go out and eat all nonsense. Whereas if you eat regular Krishna prasadam at regular times, proper amounts, and you chant at least 16 rounds, if you can chant more, that's nice. But we also have so many other duties. In addition to chanting, we have to preach, and we have to spread the Sankirtan movement, we have to worship the deity. So we're not just for chanting. And besides that, if we try to just chant, imitating Haridas Thakur, we will think of money and women, and we'll sleep, and so many other things. We won't make any spiritual progress. Better to be actively engaged. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada's genius, spiritual genius, is that he was empowered by Krishna, because of his sincerity, to design, as Brahma was able to design the whole universe, Srila Prabhupada has been able to design the whole system, the whole sacrificial system for the age of Kali. He's outlined the whole Sankirtan movement, how it should be done, what should be the basis, what's changeable, what shouldn't be changed. And the sincere followers, they'll accept it. Just like, why would you... there was one sage, he thought that why should humans have to go through the womb and, you know, grow that way. He thought, I'll make them, they can drop out of coconut trees or something he wanted to make. So he did it by his mystic power. But why? Why go to all that trouble using up your mystic power to make a better system? You're not going to improve on Brahma's system. He's the best. Brahma knows the best about bodies, species, about how to run this universe. So just accept it. You're going to improve upon. So why do you want to improve upon Srila Prabhupada's brilliant movement? It's already perfect. There's no improvement necessary. Just try to improve yourself and be a good instrument in that movement. If you try to improve on the movement, it's actually proud. You're being proud and you're being you're actually being offensive. It's already perfect, the system. Now just try to execute. Follow very nice. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. Follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans. Just take it and present it. And what will be the result? Wonderful results. If you present the same thing that you've been taught without changing it, the result will be wonderful. That people will appreciate Krishna consciousness. You'll be happy. You'll attain perfection. Everything will be auspicious. And if you try to change it, thinking you can improve upon it, then you won't please the previous acharyas. Just like that example of when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was present. One devotee, he was a scholar, very learned, and he had written a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, this commentary is even better than that of Sridhar Swami. Sridhar Swami was the original commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam. So this devotee, scholar, he thought he would improve. And Lord Chaitanya rejected. He said, anyone who doesn't accept the Swami, Sridhar Swami, is like a prostitute. Not faithful. Lord Chaitanya very strongly rejected that mood. So a devotee doesn't want to try to improve or surpass the previous acharyas, but he just wants to be the humble servant. Not surpass. He doesn't think I can be better than my guru. I will. No. It's like bhakti, like Srila Prabhupada. He didn't try to surpass his spiritual master. He just tried to please his spiritual master. But by the grace of the spiritual master, one may also perform something that appears to be even more extraordinary than his spiritual master. But that's only by the grace of the spiritual master. It's like it's the nature of a father. That the father, even though he may be a very great personality himself, he likes to see his son surpassing, doesn't he? You notice that? I know in my own case, my father was an expert in some particular athletic pursuit. And I was following in that line. So he wanted me to surpass him. There was no envy. He didn't think, I don't want my son to be better than I was. He wanted me to be better. Because that's the nature of, you know, a father. He's not envious towards his son. So similarly, the spiritual master wants his dependents, his disciples, to surpass himself. Prabhupada told us in Mayapur, 1976 or so. He said, so now I am one man, and I have created 10,000 disciples. So I want each of my 10,000 disciples, they should also create 10,000 disciples. Now we were thinking, you know, no one can do what Prabhupada can do. But here Prabhupada wanted every one of his disciples to do what he had done. So that's the difference. He, without envy and with only good wishes for his sincere disciples, wanted them to accomplish. Actually, on another occasion, he said, I started at the old age. He said, so you all can do much more than me because you're starting young. He says, I started at 70. You're starting at 20, 25, so you can do so much more. And he wasn't joking, he was serious. And although it seems like an impossible consideration, by the grace of the previous acharyas, one can perform wonderful activities beyond imagination. Prabhupada gave the example, Narad Muni. Narad Muni converted one hunter, and it's in the Bhagavatam, it's such an important event. He converted one hunter into a devotee, but how many hunters has Prabhupada converted? How many thousands? But Prabhupada very humbly said in the report, yes, by the grace of Narad Muni, we have been able to convert thousands. Not separately, not by his own ability, but by the mercy of Narad Muni. So this way, one should give credit to the superior persons in the disciplic succession. Then there's no limit. Then as long as one knows that I am simply a conduit, or I am just a connection, a wire, carrying the charge, carrying the energy from the original source, then he doesn't become proud, thinking that he's the source, he's the doer. So thank you very much. Stop there. Are there any questions? Everyone's born Sudra, but by education and by training, one can become a Vaishya or a Kshatriya or a Brahmana. So, according to one's interest and one's training. Yes, there's material nature and spiritual nature. Our material nature is according to the body and the mind and the modes of material nature that are governing them. We have to act and do some work. But that work means how we earn our living, that's all. Whereas the spiritual nature is how we develop our spirit, what we do with our soul. So that is the ashram. The varna is for... has the same thing in mind. What are you going to do to make your money, to live? And every ashram has also the same point. What are you going to do to please the Lord? How are you going to make spiritual advancement? So the essence of all the ashrams is exactly the same. To be Krishna conscious. Therefore, basically in our movement, whether one is a Brahmana or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya Shudra, still the morning program is the same. Starting from 4:30. It's not that if I'm a Vaishya, I don't have to get up till 7:30. No, because then you're not performing your ashram. Because you're one of the ashrams, you're either grihastha, brahmachari, sannyasi, or vanaprastha. So how will you advance spiritually if you don't take care of your spiritual duties? If you don't hear about Krishna, if you don't chant, if you don't associate with devotees, then just perform. Then it becomes ordinary varnashram. There's different types of varnashram also. Ordinary varnashram means, yes, you may be a Vaishya, but you're not very much concerned about Krishna. You just do the material work. That means you may be interested in karmakanda, or gyanakanda, or even worship of the demigods, upasana kanda. But that's not Daiva Varnashram. That's just ordinary Varnashram. But Daiva Varnashram is when Krishna is the center. So in this movement, we're only interested in Daiva Varnashram, at least for the members, and basically for the world, that's what we want. Although we would admit that ordinary Varnashram is better than what we have in society now, where you have no, you have communism or capitalism or socialism or something like that, which is not very good. So even ordinary Varnashram is better than that. But the best is Daiva Varnashram, where Krishna is the goal of all of our work. And that means even when you earn your living, you do it in such a way that it will be pleasing to Krishna. Okay? By following the proper varna and by following the proper ashram, the rules, and you can make spiritual advancement. But there's a higher principle too, and that is that you just you consider the spiritual things so important that you just follow the orders of the spiritual master, and you don't even consider any other natures. You just consider your spiritual nature. That's the highest instruction. In other words, Krishna is acting as spiritual master. He's instructing Arjuna. It's your duty to fight. Whether you're a Kshatriya or not, he made so many arguments, Krishna, to convince Arjuna, who was arguing on a material platform. But ultimately, his instruction is whether you're Kshatriya, not Kshatriya, this, that, just do what God wants you to do. Sarvadharman paricharya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Abandon all duties, responsibilities, dharmas, occupations, and just surrender to the Lord and do exactly what he says. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami mashicha. And God, Krishna, will remove all of your sinful reactions for not doing your duty according to Varnashram. You're afraid to give up Varnashram to serve Krishna, but Krishna says, I'll take care of that responsibility. You just do what I say. Don't worry about being sinful. Don't worry about all the things you were supposed to do. I'll take care of it. That's what Krishna says. That's the highest principle. So if one can accept that principle, then that is the most glorious thing. And if one cannot accept that principle, then he should perform his duty according to Varnashram. And that will gradually elevate him. Does that answer your question?
Perhaps I saw yesterday such a big German dog, you know, like a calf, so big with his eyes off. And I was thinking really, oh, what a pity he spoiled his human form, and he can only smell now, you know, sense objects and so on. And his life is so limited. You know what he used to have in the, if it was true, of course, he would have been a human in his previous life. I was thinking, oh, what a pity, you know, it must be so horrible to spoil your human form and just become like a dog.
So what was your conclusion?
I have to preach more, you know.
Yes,
more,
that's the right conclusion, very good. That's how you should conclude such a observation, that I have to do more, I have to preach now so that these people don't become dogs. Mm-hmm. And I also don't become a dog. By preaching, I won't become a dog. So yes, you have to become more, pray to the Lord to become more empowered and more enthusiastic to perform devotional service and save them. That's good. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Grantarashima Bhagavatam Ki Jai.